Hey, we just want to say welcome, City Life Church family and others who might be watching on another Fifth Saturday. This is part of our, what we call our Fifth Saturday Sermon Series, our conversation that we have with one another about topics that we believe matter, topics that we think that matter to you, but more importantly, topics that we think that matter to God. And so we've gathered some dear friends from City Life Church to talk about the unique experience that people have who are in the military and how that relates to the local church. So thank you for being here today, Carla and Shani and Spencer, all who have served in the military. I love this was right. We didn't plan it this way, that yesterday was Veterans Day. and so it's even though they're not watching the day after Veterans Day, we're recording the day after Veterans Day. So I feel like there's a little extra deposit of meaningfulness, right? At least for me, in reflecting on everybody who is serving and who has served. So let me just, this isn't one of our questions, right? So you knew this was going to happen. Just thinking this morning, like what, when you are a military family looking for a church, right? Are there things that you feel like that you're looking for that might be unique? Like, I feel like if there's a single mom looking for a church family, there might be some things that she's looking for that are, or a single dad, let's not just a single mom, there might be some things, questions they're asking or things that they're looking for. And so what would be those things for you? Or maybe you would say there aren't any, and that's one of the things that military families are trying to get people to understand, is that we're not really that different from any other family. So anything like that you would say when you were looking for a church and came to visit City Life years ago, were you looking for something specific or in particular because of being a military family?
Yeah, I think welcoming right away is really important. I think especially for military families, you only have a short time typically to connect. Mm-hmm. So people that are welcoming right away, authenticity and places to connect really fast. Churches won't let you serve right away or things like that. You want to be able to connect right away, be able to serve right away, because you're so used to just landing and getting to work right away.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know when we first moved here in 2007, we had not ministered right in a predominantly military context before. And Vanessa and I thought it was going to be the opposite, because right for us, we're like, if I'm not going to be in a space with people for very long, right, the cynical side of me says, well, I'm not going to invest in these relationships, so I'm not going to be here very long. Yeah. And how refreshing it was, it's just the opposite. Yeah. Yeah. Military family is like, all right, I'm going to be with you for 3 years. 1, 2, 3, go.
Yeah.
No. Let's make it feel like 10.
Yep.
And it's awesome. And I feel like that sparks some relational connectivity in the church at large, even for people that aren't military, right? It reminds people relationships matter. What, anybody else? Anything you want to throw in?
I think you kind of alluded to it, but just that openness, because sometimes people are a little reluctant to plug into a family that they know is kind of transitioning or, transient to a degree.
Yeah.
So you're looking for people that are a community that's open and understanding and willing to love you and release you, you know, when that time
that's
comes.
Good.
And I feel like we have a community here that does
that's
that
really
very
good.
Well.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah.
I know early on we began to talk as a church that the federal government is funding missionaries being sent all over the world, and how great that is, that as a church we have an opportunity and a responsibility to pour into military families, knowing that they're going to be sent all around the world, and they're going to carry the message of the gospel with them wherever they go, oftentimes overseas, right? Oftentimes to places and in spaces where the church might not even be welcome or active, and how the federal government is funding one of the greatest missions movement, right, in history. I'm like, come on, that's so good, so good. What else did you have something you were going to share, Spencer?
I think just to put a bow on it, the military has this concept of plug and play. That you know, all of us have PCS'd at some point, and you show up to
tell
a unit
what
and you
PCS
just go.
Means.
So PCS just means when the military moves you from one unit station to another. And that's usually the military moves every 2 to 3 years. Sometimes it's shorter, sometimes it's longer.
Yeah.
And there's this concept that as a military member, whether you're a sailor, airman, soldier, that you should be able to show up at a unit and just be able to go.
Gotcha.
So that I think that's translates to the church context from the military context, that we just want to, we've kind of danced around it, but you show up and you just want to go into a church.
I see. Mm-hmm.
And I feel like one of the things that at least that I look for, and I know some other military folks look for, is how the church is interacting with their veteran community. And there's kind of two larger groups. There's the military life group that's put into a corner where the church is like, we don't really know what to do with you.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You all can kind of congregate over yeah. here until you leave and take care of each other.
Uh-huh.
And then there's other churches that I think City Life does a really good job. And what we were drawn to is that the military is just a part of the church, that there is a military life group that we could speak in a context that we understand
right.
with the military members, but then also very involved, kind of the overlapping circles within yeah. the bigger part of the church.
Yeah, no, that's really good. I like that plug and play insight, right?
Yep.
Because that's your vocational context, and then you want to be able to show up at a church and do and participate and add value. And so, yeah, that's really good. So you brought up PCS, right? PCSing, is that
yes.
what you call it?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You had a participle.
Yeah, permanent
participle.
Yeah.
PCSing.
Yeah.
Which is different from deployment.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So with PCSing, you're actually relocating.
Yes.
Right? So you would leave Newport News, you would go to a new duty station somewhere in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Where deployment then would be, for people that are unfamiliar, You're going to leave to go do yep. a specific task for a set period of time,
right.
but then you're going to come home, right?
Right.
Then you're going to come home. So what are some things that a church should be cognizant of, practical ways we should help? Maybe we should start with things that we shouldn't do that maybe you've experienced, maybe here at City Life, well-intended, right? But it really is not helpful, or maybe it's counterproductive. If somebody is going to deploy, right, which is typically just one member of the family, so if you married and have kids, your spouse and children stay, right, and then you go and then come back, what are some things that a church should be thinking about if someone in a military family in their church is going to deploy to support and help? Let's start with the whatever you do, don't do, fill in the blank.
Whatever you do, don't tell them it's okay, they're going to come home.
Okay, that's good. Talk about that.
I think we're kind of in a little bit of a different context now, but I think all three of us have been to, we're all Operation Enduring Freedom, Operation Iraqi Freedom
yeah.
veterans. I guess I would say, grew up in a very different military than the military is now.
Okay.
Where active combat zones, active war zones were going on, and there's still some of that, but it's a very different military climate.
Right.
And I remember when I was getting ready to go to Afghanistan, people telling my parents, it's okay, he's going to come home, he's going to make it.
Hmm. Yeah.
And all that triggers in their mind is that there's the possibility
I
might not.
Right. Right.
And it's well-intended, but it's just similarly telling someone that just got diagnosed with cancer of you're going to make it, you're going to be fine, you're going to beat this.
Yeah.
And now you're unintentionally opening the door of,
that's really good.
Well, maybe you might not.
Right.
And I think it's okay to just live in the uncomfortability of the uncertainty. Just let it be.
Right.
I think the military gets you comfortable with just not knowing what's going on at all. You just show up to where they tell you to go and you go do the thing and you come back.
Right.
And the reality, we signed up for the possibility and we know what we signed up for.
Right.
And we don't need to be reminded of what we signed up for.
That's good advice.
And especially, it's not always, my wife was in the military longer than I was after I got out. So there was the possibility that my wife deployed, but predominantly it's the husband that will deploy. But that's not always the case. So you know, telling a mom that's about to take care of their kids and also try to meet their emotional needs because their parent is gone, either that's mom good. Or dad, mm-hmm. and then also trying to meet their spouse's emotional needs and meet that connection to say, they're going to come back, they're going to be fine, yeah. it's going to be fine, don't yeah. worry. It's well-intentioned, but they're already swirling and spiraling, and that's not stopping the spiral at all.
No, that's good.
That's good.
Yeah, that's good.
That's really good. And what else?
Oh, sorry. No, I would say similarly, it's not that long.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah.
you're only, yep. oh, it's only 3 months.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
in that 3 months, if I'm missing Christmas, my
sure.
anniversary,
yeah.
my kids' right. first steps, yeah. or, you yeah. know, my kids' birthdays, 3 months is a significant amount of time
yeah.
in the realm right. of life when you're...
We have a tendency to try to minimize things,
right?
Right, just right. as a society,
yeah.
not just the church, but we minimize, right? Yeah. And so, yeah.
Yes. And it's like, yes, 3 months is not a year. And, you know, relatively speaking, yes, it's not a long time.
Yeah.
But like you said, well-intentioned, you're trying to help, you're trying to kind of
that's really good.
Help yeah. the person. But, you know, depending on the circumstances, 3 months can be a very significant
yeah, plus
amount
all the,
of
time. Yeah. The pre-deployment training, yeah. that adds yeah. up as well, mm-hmm. too.
Yeah.
yeah. Yeah. I think probably one of the things is to not tell someone once they've gotten home from a deployment that it's all behind you. Mm-hmm. I've been told that a couple of times. And I think there's a couple of things why that hurts. One is that there's actually some very positive experiences on deployment
yeah. mm-hmm.
that I never want to forget about.
That's really good.
And the other thing is that it's the pain has just begun usually mm-hmm. when you've gotten home, because by yeah. the time you have to process it, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, my deployments, I haven't deployed for like 10 years, and those are still mm-hmm. very much mm-hmm. with me. I mean, to the point, you know, I told a friend one time that whenever I have like a flashback or a PTSD moment, it's sometimes a relief to me because I have a greater fear of forgetting those experiences.
Right.
Like,
right.
I'd rather have yeah. the pain
yeah.
and the trauma, but remember, because the
wow.
fear of forgetting is so yeah. deep because those experiences are so much a part of me.
Right.
Yeah. yeah. It's good.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because for civilians, for us, we really don't have a frame of reference for being away from our family and friends and church for an extended period of time, right? And so we struggle sometimes. And so we tend to, when we struggle, say all the wrong things,
yeah. mm-hmm.
right? And really what we're doing in those moments is we're dealing with our own discomfort
yeah.
instead of trying to help
sure.
right, the person that we're reaching out to. And so what are the questions? So let's say you get back from deployment, a friend in the church who's not from the military, taking you out to lunch, to breakfast. What are the questions you want them to ask? Like, what are the things that are helpful, right? And are going to be meaningful?
The first thing I would say to that, just as a blanket statement, it's okay to make mistakes. Like,
yeah,
it's okay
yeah.
to ask the wrong questions.
Right.
There are going to be certain
like
things that friends that might ask me in one season that would be very triggering. Like, you might like ask me, well, how was your deployment? And all of a sudden I have a flash that causes a flashback
sure.
and I freak out.
Right.
And that person's like, oh my goodness, I messed up, right?
right.
And I'm
yeah,
never
right.
going to ask. And I don't want them to shut down
yeah.
because in reality, 6 months later, I might be at home and just be like dying to talk about it,
right.
you know? And so somebody, especially with trauma, everybody reacts to trauma differently, and it's a seasonal thing, you know?
Yeah.
And so, a good question to ask is, you know, what was it like on a deployment?
Right.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And again, that might actually trigger some things at some point.
That's good.
Yeah.
No, you've got to be willing to be courageous.
Yeah.
Right? You've got to be willing
right.
to show up. You've got to be okay with the discomfort. It's and be willing to make some mistakes.
Totally.
That's really
yeah.
good.
But I think the big difference, and it's already inherent in your questions, and I feel like it's kind of inherent in our community here at City Life for the most part that we've experienced, is the motivation for the question that you're
mm-hmm.
asking.
Mm-hmm.
There have been several times where I have been asked questions about my military experience, and I know it's not from a place of honesty or attempting to learn or a genuine right. concern about me. It's out of novelty.
Yeah.
It's because they watched Saving Private Ryan sure. or SEALs on TV, or they sure. they watched all their context of the military is in media, and the difference between like, hey, can I ask you a question? So I saw the show, and I don't know if it's similar or not.
Right.
But is I saw this thing. Does that really happen? That's a much different question than, did you kill anybody?
Right.
What was
sure.
it like?
Right.
What was
right.
it, and like, I have no problem with people asking mm-hmm. me questions about my military mm-hmm. experience, my deployment experience, the things
right.
that I did. And I always kind of qualify with it of like, if you're honestly asking me, if you ask me a question I'm not comfortable with answering, I'm just going to tell you that I'm not comfortable.
Sure.
And continue to ask me,
right.
and I may be willing to talk about it later. But I think the most important thing is examining your own motivation when you're going into those conversations and you're asking that military member,
yeah.
making sure that your motivation mm-hmm. is known. And that's easy just by qualifying it.
Right.
Of like, hey, feel free to tell me, but are you doing okay? How was your deployment? Mm-hmm. I heard it was a little rough.
Yeah.
You want to talk about it?
Yeah.
And I know for me, that would open up the door where if it wasn't then, like, you know what? Today's not the day that I can go there, but thanks for asking.
Yeah.
I'm way more likely 6 weeks later of if we're hanging out again of like, hey, did you really want to know? Do you mind me
yeah.
telling you? The motivation is it makes everything because now I'm not a novelty because I'm also trying to figure
yeah.
out how my deployment was. We don't realize how big of a question that is.
That's really good.
Mm-hmm. Because it's messy.
Yeah.
War is undignified. It's messy.
Sure.
It's gross. I went to Afghanistan at 18. I was a kid. So you're trying to reconcile that
right.
piece with also the atrocities of humanity and also
right.
the good things that happened and the bad things that happened.
Yeah.
A long-winded way of saying, just examine your motivation
That's
walking
really good.
Into those conversations too.
Right. We have a tendency to use people to satisfy our own curiosities.
Right.
Right. And that's self-serving. So we're saying don't be self-serving,
yep.
right, in your interactions. Be genuinely caring, mm-hmm. right, for people. So, yeah, that's good. Anything else that comes to mind that you would say these are the kinds of questions you are helpful?
I think maybe reintegration type questions and just realizing that when you come back from the deployment,
right,
a lot of times there's a lot of work that's still happening.
Yeah.
Like for me, for instance, where I'm mill to mill, my husband's also military. So I've been on both sides of the coin.
Mm-hmm.
I've been the one deploying
right.
and I've been the one left behind.
Okay.
And both of them have their own dynamic and their own, you know, pluses and minuses. But I remember one time when I came home from a deployment, my husband thought he was being super helpful and reorganized my closet.
Oh, yeah.
And I walked in and I lost it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. sure.
Because the home that I had been imagining for 6 months
yeah.
was now messed with.
Right, right.
And what I was seeing was not what I was, you know, imagining
right.
to come home to.
That's
and
interesting.
So where he's thinking he's helping,
right.
it like shattered my world
yeah.
because I'm like, my things are not where I
Isn't
left
that
them.
Something?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's a lot that goes into that reintegration
yeah.
process.
Mm-hmm.
We often romanticize it with the airport homecomings and all that stuff. And while all that stuff is great, that can very quickly go away when
yeah.
you're coming
right.
home.
Yeah. Right.
Because you're talking about a family who has for 6 months, 3 months, 12 months,
mm-hmm.
tried to figure out how to make a family and a home work
right.
with your absence.
Yeah. yeah.
And now you're coming back and you're asking in a sense to jump into their dance
sure.
yeah.
that they've had to change
sure.
to make work for your absence.
Yeah.
yeah.
So, you know, the kids going to school and bedtime and all of that, a lot of that routine has changed to accommodate your absence. And now you're coming back and it doesn't just change back.
Yeah.
Right.
You're almost asking permission to enter back into
yeah.
that dynamic and for things to shift
yeah.
again and to figure that out. So.
Yeah.
there's a lot of things that have to be worked out, and it's not always romantic and pretty.
Yeah. No, it's like jumping onto a moving train, right?
You're coming into a family that's changed.
Yeah.
Everybody's changed.
Yeah.
Like my last deployment, my youngest son, he cried every night for 6 months.
Mm.
When I came home, my husband said, I could not have done that one more day.
Right.
I just would have broken.
Wow.
And you're coming home to that. You're coming home to a kid that doesn't want you to leave the room and doesn't want you to leave the house.
Yeah.
You know, a spouse that's triggered by those cries because they've had to listen to it for 6 months. So I just think having that understanding that the airport homecoming is a moment. But when you get home to that house, there's a lot that has to be worked out.
Yeah.
And reimagined for that family.
Yeah.
So
no, that's good.
Asking them how is reintegration going?
That's a good question.
You know, that family dynamic going.
No, that's good.
Those things.
Yeah, because children change quickly.
Yeah.
Right. Your spouse probably hasn't changed a lot because the idea is that we're grown up. But if you've got children, right, you're in 6 months, you really change as a child in 6 months, and so.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
And so you're looking at your child from your perspective, but you know, depending on when you leave, in that sub 2 years old, 2 years old,
they
have a lot of that stranger danger dynamic, and now you've removed yourself for 6 months.
Mm.
Now we have the technology that there's FaceTime, and you know what I mean? There's still a lot of video capabilities.
Right.
But early in my career, you didn't have a lot of that FaceTime.
You mean like you feel like a stranger to your child.
Right, because you're coming back to a two-year-old who hasn't seen you in 6 months, and you're trying to grab them, and all of a sudden they're like, you know, I might recognize your voice.
Yeah.
You're telling me your mom or your dad, but, you know, I haven't felt your touch in 6 months. And now
that's
all
good.
Of a sudden this person is here, you know, embracing you, and you're like...
That's good.
So there, depending on the age of your children, there's a lot of really delicate things that are happening behind the scenes that are worth asking about.
That's rich.
And, and you've changed too.
Yeah. Right? That's a good point.
Your kids have changed, but you've changed too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people, there's some trepidation there of not kind of knowing how to approach that. And I think with that awareness, if you can ask, with the understanding that the reintegration is going to be tough and there's going to be moving pieces, I feel like that opens the door. Then you can ask those like, hey, how are you and Alvin doing?
Mm-hmm.
Have you guys gotten a date night yet? Can I take the kids so you guys
That's
have
good.
Some time?
Right.
If you're working in kid life and you know these kids, if you know Zion and Eli and stuff, if I'm working back in kid life, even just asking like, hey, how you doing? And like, mommy came home, is that so exciting? And they may say something too, like back in that appropriate environment to be able to have that conversation, not getting into the weeds of it, but then also being able to give the heads up because we have that type of relationship established already. And being able to wrap around and finding the need without inserting yourself, but rather if you need something, just let me know.
Yeah.
That's such an arbitrary, open-ended, but that's not combined just to the military too. That's special needs families and single parent families. It's such an unhelpful phrase of let me know if you need anything.
Yeah,
but
sure, because it puts a responsibility on them, right?
But if you can identify a tangible need of like, have you guys gotten a weekend away? Can I take the kids for a weekend
good.
So you
that's
and Alvin
good.
Can find time to reconnect?
Yeah.
Or maybe it might be, I take the kids so you and Alvin can figure out what your closet's supposed to look like.
And it sounds silly, but
deployment takes away any kind of feeling or semblance of control that you have physically, emotionally. Like it strips a lot of that away. And then when you come back and the carpet's pulled out from underneath like the closet, even just the simple act of like, I may not put my closet back the way that it was, but like I'm going to take the time and we're going to do this together and change it in the way that works for me.
Yeah.
That is a really tangible thing of being able to kind of rebuild that reintegration. So identify the need and having those conversations and being aware that reintegration is usually the toughest part.
Yeah.
At least for me, it was way harder coming back than it was.
Harder than leaving.
The reality is deployment's simple.
Yeah.
I remember coming back a week after deployment And I had to go to Walmart to get deodorant. I was out. And I ended up having like a full-blown PTSD panic attack in the aisle, in the deodorant aisle, because there were so many choices.
Yeah.
We're in the Shopette tent. There was one deodorant. So I would go to, when I was on deployment, you go to the little Shopette tent and you're not making those choices because, well, this is what they got.
Right.
Whereas now you come back and you're overwhelmed with the choices because I woke up, I went to work. If we got attacked, you do what you got to do during that point. You do your job. You eat chow at the same time with the same people. The menu That's rotates. Like, it's all of your decisions are stripped down and now you're just thrown back in and where something like deodorant is like, now I have 50 different deodorants to choose from, and you don't realize how overwhelming that is and how complicated our life is and our world is here compared to deployment.
That's interesting. I would have never thought of that.
It's every day. I know my first deployment, they played the movie Groundhog's Day every day. When you walked into work, that movie would be at the same
Right.
Like the same place every day, because that's what it's like.
Yeah.
It's like Groundhog's Day. You wake up, you work out, you eat, you work, you go back to your tent, you sleep, and you wake up the next day, and it's pretty much rinse and repeat. There may be differences, different nuances to the mission or something like that, but you're taking care of yourself for the most part. You work out when you want, you eat when you want,
right.
you have work and things like that, but it's...
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's not a whole lot of...
So when you come home, it can be overwhelming how much is expected of
Incredibly.
You.
And I think going back to your point that you have changed so much on your deployment and you're not, there was like this same thing, but there was also dramatic things happening on that deployment, and you've grown accustomed to those things. So you've changed.
Yeah.
So then you come home, you know, especially for marriages, it's hard because you don't realize you've changed that much.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So then you come home and you're trying to almost relearn each other. So marriages really tend to struggle. And I think the spouses have changed too, because they've had to adapt to this whole way of living.
Right.
So there's change that happens. It's almost, I mean, I feel like Nathaniel and I, my husband, like, we went almost back through phases of, like, learning to date each other. I mean, there's just, like, this rawness. The intimate parts are hard because there's just parts of you that you don't know anymore, and you have to figure those things out. I think that's one thing, even with back to the questions, it's like, you know, asking, you know, how can I help you in practical ways, or... can I help you with processing anything? Those questions are helpful, like, in increments, you know, a month out, 6 months out. Asking if you can, you know, schedule babysitting, like, at the six-month mark, because by that point...
Because for me, I'm thinking you've been home for 6 months, you've reintegrated.
Right.
And you're saying, no, this is a long process and a long journey.
Yeah, the six-month mark is probably maybe the hardest part.
Yeah.
Is you're really, you know, you've the honeymoon phase. If some people have honeymoon phases when you come back, you know, you get to have things you didn't get to have deployed, you know. So there is sometimes a high. Sometimes it's not a high at all. Sometimes it's just terrible. And we've all probably experienced that on certain returns. But then, then you're like, start to process some of the things, and you're like, oh my goodness, you know. Wow.
And that's usually where everybody goes away, right? Because when you first come home, everybody's super helpful. They're asking because
it's
they think it's within that 6 months. And now the dust settles and now it's quiet.
Yeah.
And now you're actually thinking and you're processing because you're far enough away. But then the tangible help and the people asking how you're doing, like you said, you wouldn't even think like 6 months, like you've reintegrated at that point. And it can be incredibly isolating. Being at that point, and now you're starting to process. And everybody that was willing to help you initially and ask those questions, they're all gone.
No, that's really good. All right, so let's talk a little bit more about trauma. I know it's come up some. For a church specifically, maybe let's ask this question. What are some of the warning signs, maybe, that someone is dealing with trauma or PTSD
and is not getting the help that they need. What are some things that you would say to us as pastors, but then also just for people in the church? How do you broach that subject with someone, you know? Because that's right, that's a weighty thing to ask someone, is to feel like maybe they need help, they're not getting help. Like, how should someone broach that topic with a person in the military? Or would you say that it's no different than anybody else who you feel like is struggling with trauma? And even by the way the question's being asked, does it assume because it's trauma and you're in the military that it's that you're different? Maybe you would say anybody who's experiencing trauma that needs help, it would be the same for anyone, if that makes sense. Maybe you would say don't put us in a different category, right? Trauma is trauma.
I remember in 2019, in February, I started therapy. And I returned from Afghanistan in February of 2014. And I had tried several times to get into therapy and mental health services, and it just never worked out for one reason or another, and just had really bad luck, particularly in the military at that time. From my understanding, they've gotten a lot better.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But when it comes to approaching and supporting mental health and trauma and PTSD, but at least in my experience, in my time when I was in, that was not the case. So I remember spending a lot of time fixating on looking for a therapist in Hampton Roads that had experience specifically with PTSD and military trauma.
Right.
And I went to my therapist that I've been seeing for years now. Shout out Mark, Black Pine Counseling. But I remember sitting in his office and he's like, I don't have any military experience, but I do have trauma experience.
Okay.
And when you strip it down, trauma is trauma. But I also recognize that there's some nuances that I need to learn, but I can do that.
Right.
But
at the root of it, good.
Mm-hmm. Trauma is trauma and I'm not afraid of it.
Yeah.
And that gave me comfort being willing to go into that space, because I think for a long time, whenever I bring up my experiences, I felt like I was making the therapist uncomfortable because of the things that I was talking about, and that I couldn't be in a place where I was authentic. And finally being in a situation where he's like, I'm not afraid of this. Trauma at the end of the day.
Right.
And I will learn the vernacular and the nuances that and do some more research.
Yeah.
And he did. He did his homework. But he's like, when you boil it down, it all kind of responds the same way. And I think in the church, I think kind of what we were talking about before, we feel like, I think we do a really bad job at just being uncomfortable and being okay with not knowing answers and not knowing how to fix things.
Right.
And it's okay to just sit rather than fix. And that's, in some ways, that's the same with marriages, it's the same with kids. Like, it's not all that different, but there are, I feel like with the military, especially in the recent wars, there's kind of the added component of a moral injury that comes on top of it.
Define what that is for
people. Yeah, so
you talk about that before, but for people that would be unfamiliar with that phrase.
Yeah, so there's been more and more research in the PTSD field over the years that there's this kind of acute, like, combat trauma. There's the acute, like, you were out in the village and you got shot at, and it's a firefight like you see in the movies, and that is an acute specific event. And then you have, within the recent wars, it's more asymmetric warfare, which means you have a consolidated force like the American Army. It's organized, it's representing a country, and you're going against a asymmetric, or like a guerrilla force, so like the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, those entities. And when you're over there, they're mixed within the civilians. And you're having
I
to
see.
Make moral decisions all of the time.
Right.
That you don't even realize how weighty the moral decisions are that you're making. And for a while, we were lumping PTSD, and we were treating the people that were getting into firefights the exact same way that we were treating the intelligence analyst that's operating the drones.
Right.
That's sitting in Nevada in a basement, but they're dropping bombs in Afghanistan.
Right, right.
And there wasn't, because they were being treated the same, there wasn't space for differences.
Okay.
So we've come a lot farther in being able to kind of sparse out in terms of treatment and mm-hmm. speaking to veterans. And I mean, less than 40% of Iraq and Afghanistan veterans actually fired their weapon.
Right.
In World War II, it was less than 10%. Vietnam, I think it was around 75% of all service members that were there fired their weapon. But when you have less than half of the folks that were deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan that are then coming home, and everybody's just assuming that, oh, you didn't go off the base, so you didn't get in a firefight, so you didn't do this.
I see.
Oh, mm-hmm. you're fine.
Right, right.
And we have a tendency to make things make sense and comfortable in our heads based off of what we know.
Yeah.
Rather than being able to walk into a conversation of, hey, Shani, I don't know what you experienced. I don't know what you went through, but I do know I've noticed that you just seem quieter lately. I notice your shoulders are like up in your ears. Like it seems like you're carrying a lot of tension. It might be hygiene. It might be
this is good.
Drinking. Like
it
might be hygiene. It might be withdrawal. It might even be the way that they're talking about things. Mm. They might be joking more, but the jokes have gotten way more morbid.
Yeah. Right.
And that's super common within the military of using humor as a coping mechanism within the military is super common.
Yeah.
Which is sometimes really healthy.
It is.
Sometimes.
In the appropriate context.
Right,
and you need to have that because in deployment, you don't have time to process those things.
Sure.
You have to be able to operate because it's going to happen again and again and again and again. But then and the military does a really good job at teaching you how to do that part.
Yeah.
About how to cope, how to be able to have something traumatic horrible happen. And you might lose, like we lost a lot of people in my unit while we were over there, and you lose someone and the next day you're up and you're doing your job again because that's the mission and what you have to do.
Right.
Yeah. But they don't teach you the second part of it, of when you come home, and I always felt like I had this box that I was carrying around and I could see all the things in the box and I knew that they were heavy and that I wanted to put it down, but I didn't know how to do that.
Yep. Yeah.
I didn't know how to put it on the shelf.
Yeah.
And when if there's somebody you're noticing the 6 month year mark, 2 year mark, it may happen way down the road.
Like retirement.
Yeah,
right?
Like retirement.
So true.
It's when you finally have a chance to take that box off the shelf and open it.
Yeah.
And I stuffed all those things in that box and put that box away. And now I have time to sit and unpack it.
Because so the experience might have been a long time ago, but the trauma is still present.
He said that you get really good at putting things in the box because you don't have time to think about the birthday you missed or, I mean, even, you know, of course, the combat things, the things you've seen, the things you've done, all that. But then there's the things at home that you just don't have time to think about that and process it because you have a job to do of a high caliber, other people's lives are on the line. And you just don't have time to unpack that box.
Yeah,
that's
a
really good analogy.
The military spends 8, 10, 12 weeks in this thing called boot camp. Of teaching you how to do exactly this.
Yep.
Of learning how to, when you hit a wall, something happens, you drive on, is what they call it. It's it's that plug and play mentality that we talked about. It's being able to, you gotta hop in and just go. And then regardless of what's happening, then you gotta hop in the next place and go.
Yep.
But when I got my discharge papers, that was one day.
Yeah.
And that was here you go, thanks for your service. Thanks for playing.
Yeah.
And you walk out of the building and you're sitting in your car in the parking lot and you're like, now what?
Yeah.
And they spent all this time teaching me how to operate in this way, but they don't teach you how to then reintegrate and find that identity outside of the military. Because it's easier to do that when everybody else around you is doing
sure,
that too.
Sure, sure.
and why things like military life groups are so comfortable, because sometimes it's just being able to look shared experiences and just knowing that we have that commonality, and it's just such a weird world that most people just don't get, and we don't realize that people don't get, because you're completely kind of isolated and cut off.
So this creates an opportunity for us to pivot to this final question we want to tackle together. Spencer, your comment about when you're in the military, you're around people. I would call that it's a homogenous space in many respects. There's a lot of sameness, right? And then you come back into, say, like a church like City Life that is incredibly diverse, not just ethnically, but it's diverse politically, socioeconomically, right, generationally. So let's talk a little bit about the challenge in a politically diverse space. There's a term that gets used a lot. I get used a lot. I use this term a lot, which is what prompted this conversation we're having today. Was Shani reached out and said, Fred, when you use this term, what do you mean? Because I think it could mean something different to different people. It's like, this is good, right? These are the kind of conversations we want to have as a church family. So the term Christian nationalism. So when I use that, I'm using that to describe when people conflate Christianity with political conservatism, meaning that Christian nationalism is the idea that if you are a Christian, you must be politically conservative, right? And I would challenge that viewpoint. And I would say Christian nationalism is a term that is describing people who say those two things have to go together. So for a person that's in the military, patriotism is important. I would say for me as an individual, patriotism is important. So how do you help a church like ours that is diverse celebrate patriotism but not promote Christian nationalism? Let me throw that out there. Or have you found that in your own journey as being a member of the military? Have you felt that tension personally, that patriotism and Christian nationalism are create conflict in society, and especially in church communities that are politically diverse?
Yeah, and thanks for defining that for us. I think that's helpful. Yeah. I know when you and I met up, I was pondering that term, and I was thinking, like, I was talking to God actually recently. I was like, why do I hate this term?
Yeah.
I think I'm on the same page with people, because, I mean, we absolutely need to have God before our nation, and then especially for me, who loves the world and traveled and just, you know, I love Middle Eastern hospitality and honor and Asia, just, you know. So I think for me, one of the reasons that the term has been so triggering for me is because over the years in the military, when I was struggling and wrestling with my own patriotism and my faith, I had some friends that just weren't present. And so in those moments, there was a scar that was there.
Yeah.
And so I've walked through a lot of healing and processed through that. So it's not this open wound. Mm-hmm. I think if it was an open wound, I probably wouldn't react very well. Mm-hmm. And because I've gone through that, I actually have empathy for some people that react poorly, if that sounds, you know.
Yeah.
And so because it is something that we wrestle through in the military, you know, and it's not an easy way to answer. Like, I remember in Iraq, I was right before the Battle of Mosul, one of the biggest battles that happened in Iraq since the initial invasion. There was an experience where I was just on base crying out to the Lord for him to push ISIS out of the nation, push ISIS. And I cried out to him. And like the next day, there was this massive ISIS convoy that just departed. And that just doesn't happen.
Sure.
And both U.S. forces and Iraqi helicopters went and bombed that convoy. And I remember thinking, like, wow, like God answered my prayer in this moment. We've talked about this. God answered my prayer in this moment. Now, would I link that to, like, that was God's, you know, it's messy, right?
Right.
When you look at the Old Testament, like,
When you're in a personal situation, you are reading your Bible, you are crying out, you are in this, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm not gonna go make a theology of this, right? Yeah. I'm not gonna connect this.
Sure.
That's the mess, that's messy, right?
No, it gets problematic, right? Yeah. When every time something happens, people have necessarily, it's the difference between correlation and causation.
Right. Yeah.
Two things can happen at the same time, but it's not always this thing caused that thing.
Right.
Right, yeah.
And
yeah.
So, you can't do it per we're humans. You know, we are as Christ followers, we're gonna fight evil the best that we can.
Yeah.
And sometimes there's gonna be mistakes that we make and we're still working through that. You know, I remember Afghanistan, when I returned from Afghanistan, that was probably the biggest thing is I saw evil in my own nation. I saw, you know, and mostly in the power structures. Mm-hmm. And that those of us in the military, a lot of times people will talk about bad things of America, and I'm like, oh, I can tell you so much more.
And there's
still a deep patrietism.
Yeah.
And people
maybe
don't understand that.
That's good,
and a lot of that is I've seen the, well, guess what? In war, like, there is hell.
Yeah.
You know, there is hell. Like, I remember sitting in a boardroom with all the Iraqi generals, and this darker skinned Iraqi guy walked in, and the whole room bust up laughing. The whole room bust up laughing. And I look at my friends and I'm like, what is happening in here, right? And we had to, in that space, we had to make a decision. Okay, this is outright racism right in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to figure out how we're gonna respect and honor this other nation.
Mm.
And so, and we had a guy on our team, a master sergeant, black guy, and we had to take him aside and be like, hey, how do we have your back in this situation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure.
And so, you know, there are things that I've seen in the while working with other nations that are terrible. And it makes me very thankful for my own nation and vice versa.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, there's things that I hate in my nation. I wish I could have Middle Eastern hospitality.
Yeah,
I wish that we'd go over to people's houses and there'd be tea served. And you know, there's honor. Yeah. So,
no, that's good, right? Because what I hear you saying is don't try to make something complicated simple. That you can be a patriot. Yeah. You can love your country, but still be willing to talk about the things in your country that need to change.
Absolutely.
Or the things in your country that are broken or are harmful, and to want to talk about those things or point them out or maybe even protest those things doesn't mean that you're not patriotic.
Exactly.
Right?
That's
really good. That's really good.
Yeah.
What are some other ways that you would say in churches that you observe don't do a good job of making room for people to be patriotic but also be politically diverse?
I don't know if this entirely answers the question, but I think just the notion of Christian nationalism is an attempt to take an imperfect thing and fit it in with a perfect thing.
Mm, that's really good, Spencer.
Christ himself is perfect, and the idea of even like a nation state that we know today didn't even really start coming about until 16th, 15th century.
Okay.
When Thomas Hobbes put Leviathan out, for my history nerds that like want to go down that path.
Yeah.
But like that was really the start of this idea. And even then, Hobbes thought life was just nasty, brutish, and short. And like we could find a way to kind of make these nation states. And now we have these nations, but that's a man-made thing.
Yeah.
That the idea that there are states and that there's countries that do, that's man-made. And as I was driving here today, I passed three different buildings on Warwick that had the American flag flying with the Virginia flag flying also. And underneath the American flag was the Virginia flag.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And within the military, they drill this stuff into you, and we know it, and most people may not know it. But anytime the American flag is displayed and alongside any other flag, whether it be unit colors or state colors or, you know,
okay,
anything like that, the American flag is always highest.
Okay.
It is never allowed to be lower than anything else. And I think my azimuth for me of like when my patriotism and my nationalism and my love for my country and all of its warts and wanting it to change
really
lot of my want for change because I love this country so much.
Mm-hmm.
If I notice that I'm placing the American flag above Christ.
Yes. That's
and that I'm not absolutely holding that, my priorities are out of whack.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because in the military, we are united, but there's also this thinking about like my the hut that I lived in Afghanistan with the other soldiers I was with, and the guy to my left was from born and raised in South Boston. And I was a military kid, San Diego, Rhode Island, Japan, right, all over the place. And then another guy from California, another guy from Tennessee. And we all had different beliefs and thoughts and ideas, but we were unified in this idea that we all wore the same uniform, we all wore the same flag on our sleeve, and that we were all kind of united in this mission together. And the military does a really, really good job, but kind of its bread and butter of being able to take anybody from anywhere and molding it into unifying all these people that otherwise would never be in the same room. And I feel like when the church is working more about pointing people to our unified mission of the gospel and Jesus and loving people, when you have Christ above the American flag, then I can be proud of my nation and also have space for there's a lot of stuff that's wrong with it.
Yeah.
And there might be someone that's not proud. And they may flat out say, I'm not proud to be an American. And that's okay too.
That's really
we have
good.
Different experiences and we have different thoughts and we have different beliefs, but the reality is we both wear the same seal on our heart. And we both are unified in our mission that is going after Christ and building his church. And churches can kind of conflate that to a degree where they're not, where they get into trouble, where they're trying to play down here where the American flag is and they're not playing up here. And then you're almost automatically polarizing one or the other. And there's no winning there. Because there's, especially in a multicultural, diverse church like we have, you're going to isolate one way or the other. But if the focus is on, we all have different thoughts, we have different beliefs, there's different social issues, there's things that are more important to us than other people, but we're all united behind this ultimate higher purpose that is Christ, it is easier for all of those things down below to kind of fall, I wouldn't say by the wayside, but their importance
in
is
line.
Less comparably to the greater goal and the greater mission. And I feel like for some people, that concept just might not be foreign. For the military folks, we're like, well, like you have, we have commander's directives. That's what the mission is. The commander says, oh, we're going to do A, B, C. And then everybody below that commander is like, cool.
Sure.
And everybody is doing different jobs and different things, but we're all doing it with the direction of we're all following into this thing.
Because in the military, that's it's actually one of the most diverse spaces you could ever step into, right?
Yeah,
when
absolutely.
You're talking about ethnic diversity, socioeconomic diversity, generational diversity, and even political diversity,
absolutely,
right? But and people forget that. People who maybe look like me, right? Middle-aged white man, would I think sometimes mistakenly believe that the that everybody in the military is a Republican, right? And and so that's not the case, right? The military is a very diverse space, but I it's the mission, right? That brings that brings everyone together, and that we have a shared mission, and and that's the gospel, right? And to proclaim the gospel, and you've heard me say this phrase often. We have to learn, which I don't think we do well to especially in America, is that you've got to be willing to walk in disagreement instead of standing in conflict. To move forward in your relationship, even though you have some things that you disagree about, as opposed to putting that relationship on pause and focusing on the conflict, right? That's actually a choice to make, and we're uncomfortable with disagreement. And we've got to get better at that. If there's one thing that you would want to say in closing to somebody who needs to find a church home, who's in the military, not trying to recruit to City Life, because you hear us say that all the time, that, right? There's lots of churches for lots of people. If someone's watching right now who does not have a church home, and who's in the military, what's something that you would want to say to them?
For one, I would say, I mean, Spencer, you said it really well, but there is place for patriotism and Christianity. Because to me, without patriotism, we don't even get to sit here and have this conversation.
That's so good.
We've been to countries and watched people that are not able to exercise their Christianity because their freedoms are compromised.
Yeah.
So that's we fight really for good, those Carla. Freedoms. We fight for people to have the space to disagree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, those are the freedoms that we fought for.
Yeah.
So I mean, without patriotism, this conversation doesn't even happen.
Yeah.
So there is,
that's great.
I mean, patriotism has a purpose. But like Spencer said, it all has to fall below,
right?
You know, God. He has to be the center of everything. And I just think, you know, if you're not finding a space where God is,
that's so good.
The mission, you know, the ultimate mission.
Yeah.
You might need to find another space.
No, so you would say find a church where Jesus is first.
Yeah,
absolutely. And that there's not a close second, right? There are seconds, but Jesus has to be paramount in that space, not a political point of view.
Absolutely.
No, that's good.
He has to be, you know, everything else has to fall below.
Yeah.
It's like an umbrella. He has to cover it all.
Yeah.
So I absolutely think there's place for patriotism. I think it's necessary, it's needed, but it can't come at the cost of being
my allegiance to Jesus.
Yeah, you're representative of Jesus.
What's something else that you would say to somebody out there in the military who needs to find a church?
Yeah, I would say get connected. I mean, relationships are messy, but start somewhere.
Mm.
I think I would also say if you're in Virginia, we're blessed that this area is just, there's so many resources for vets, and a church is a really great place to get connected to those resources.
Yeah.
Even this last year, I've gotten super connected to the Armed Services Art Partnership, and they do all kinds of classes through comedy and writing, and just a way to get connected. I think the church is a great spot to start those connections, and then make relationships with people that actually can help you find what you need, whether it's counseling or being with, sometimes it's great to be, because there is a time and place to be with other vets. I think that we
That's
know
really
each other.
Good. Yeah.
There's healing there. If the church has a vet community, get connected to that community. And then, you know, as you build up trust to be able to share your story with people that are outside of the vet community as well, or vet and active military.
No, that's good. Yeah, I would just play on that, right? It's okay to want to find a church because you have a need.
Yeah.
Right. I would say maybe this is my just an observation. Maybe because of the plug and play, military people are oriented. I don't want to go there unless I can contribute right away. And then I would say as a pastor, it's okay to come if you don't feel like you're ready to contribute. It's okay to be motivated to find a church because you feel like you have a need. And sometimes I think we feel guilty about that, you know? I don't want to show up because I don't want to be the person that's in need. And then I would say as a pastor, it's okay.
Yeah, that's good.
It's okay.
That's so good.
Yeah.
And it kind of fits what I would say, which find a place that fits your family.
Mm.
I think
that's,
it's easy with that plug and play mindset. And I have a weird experience where I was a military child and I'm also a military veteran. So I kind of grew up being the kid that got drug around, but then also became the dragger.
Right.
But you got to find a place that fits the need of your family. And I feel like it's easy when you get to a new duty station, you find one church, and you're like, well, this is good enough. And you just hop in. And because you have to kind of, in the military, you adapt. Usually the equipment's not great, and you have to just work with what you got. And
they only sell that one deodorant.
Right.
You got to make it work.
But I love what you said. It's like giving yourself permission to go to a couple of different places.
Yeah.
And find a place that fits the needs, not just of yourself, but your family.
Yeah.
You might find a place that, it's really great for yourself and your spouse, but there's like zero children's ministry. And your kids are serving too, whether you like it or not, your spouse is serving too.
Yeah.
So if you find a place that, and it might not be at one place, it might be you find a church that the woman's ministry is fantastic.
Yeah.
But like children's church isn't, but then you have like a base camp and a children's ministry at City Life, but you're going It's a freedom life for women's ministry.
Yeah, yeah.
And you might just have to kind of, in your unorthodox life, find a way to find community that fits.
Right.
But the needs of all of your family need to be
That's good.
Accounted for.
Absolutely.
And don't just That's settle good. For good enough.
That's so
and,
good.
And just pray into it. Because we are the big C church. It's not a, but you don't have to pop into a church is not a unit.
Yeah.
It's not a single unit that you're assigned to, right?
Yeah.
Like, and it's easy for, we laugh, but it's like, yeah, well, that's where our brain defaults to the military because that's what it's melded to do. But I would just encourage you, especially if you're new to the area or you're about to be in a new place or if you're going someplace else, over and over and over again, we have so many people that have come and gone from City Life that are just near and dear to our hearts that we've known that have gone to other places that have found community that is just as strong and sometimes stronger than meeting the needs of their family and the specific need for that season. It may look different, the type of church that you're at your previous duty station. You might need a different type of church in this because your family's in a new season. It's not enough
good.
for kid life. Maybe your kids need a better youth group because now they're that age.
Yeah.
Like it's thinking of it simply, we'd be like, well, yeah, of course there's a difference, but it's easy to just you find what works and then you grab onto it and be okay with being a little bit flexible and finding ways to fit the needs of your entire family.
Yeah, so good. This has been fantastic. So I just want to say thank you to each of you for being willing to enter into this space, have this conversation, one for both the content, but to also model, right, what genuine community should feel like, especially within the context of a church, to be able to sit down and have these kind of in-depth, meaningful conversations with each other. If you're watching this, there's a couple of things I want you to know. One is that what you just saw is an abridged version of the conversation that we just had. We've been here for 3 days. I know it doesn't look like, no, I'm just kidding. But we have had a longer conversation. And so because of the time constraints of our fifth Saturday online worship experience, you've gotten an abridged version of it. And so in the our tech team will find the right, or our media team will find the right place to put a link, whether it's going to pop up on the screen or whether it's going to be in the description. But you'll have the opportunity to go watch the full conversation that we've had. And I would encourage you to do that because there have just been some great things that have been shared and you need to have an opportunity to hear all of that. I do just want to reference a couple of resources. One is if this conversation about diversity that we touched on is new for you, the Holy Post podcast on YouTube, I'd recommend that as a resource for you to kind of dip your toe in the water to this idea of diversity in Christian spaces. And then also the book Compassion and Conviction is a great primer, I would say, on this idea of diversity within the context of the Christian community. So just on behalf of City Life Church, we just want to say thank you to you again for sharing your Saturday with us, and we'll see you next week.
Hey, we just...